Shope.
Hey, put a little... I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thinking about a couple of topics that have come up throughout the afternoon. Talking with Sal earlier, what will be the Bills' big question? So if you were to open up an article that was every team's big question, what does this team have to answer, figure out, to be better in 2026? What would be the Bills' big question? And, you know, not surprisingly for anybody to say this, Sal went right to the coaching changes. And you tell me if you want. I mean, I'm not calling you, so you have to want to do it. But is there enthusiasm about Joe Brady in this new role? I've got everybody's got a podcast. Somebody calls up and talks about Joe's hockey podcast, and Sal's got his own podcast. And, well, it's not mine, but I'm on it. ADP Chasing Tonight. And when we talk about the Bills, I don't get the sense that there's like, well, I don't know. I don't know how much, let me put it this way. I don't know how much there is to say about the coaching change when it pertains to their offense. I think you have to decide for yourself whether you think, and people that are more in the know tend to say yes to this, whether you think Brady didn't really run the offense he wanted, or at least to the extent that he wanted. Every new coach talks about being more aggressive, and Brady is no exception to that. And I tend to, that goes in one ear and out the other for me. I'll say it yet again. Find me the coach who one time said he wanted his team to be less aggressive. It's never happened in the history of sports. Aggressive sounds good. What is aggressive? Is that passing more? Is that flea flickers? Is that going on fourth and six? Like, what do you mean? You know, 3 and 4 wide receiver sets? I don't know. It would surprise me if the Bills rolled out this year with an offense that did that. They don't have the players to be a team that, in that one example, they don't have the players to be a team that can roll out 4 wide receivers. Even if you include Kincaid as one of them, which I think you should. He's basically, he plays a wide receiver role on this team. He is a part-time slot receiver who can't be more full-time for 2 reasons. 1, Shakir exists, and 2, his knees. So, I don't know, like, he's not useless, but it's not something you can really count on. What does it mean to be more aggressive? I bet I could find, whether it's Brady or Sean McDermott, the last 2 off seasons before this one, clips of their talking about being more aggressive. I don't know. I don't want to assume that. The offense and the team have been very successful. There might not have been a lot of times where they were talking about being that different. But it's never the other way around. It's always aggressive. Aggressive is better. How does it happen that 32 teams times 2, offense and then defense, 64 play callers, offense and defense, want to all be more aggressive? How is the sport not blown up at this point? Are they actually doing that? I mean, McDermott on defense, I wouldn't really describe as aggressive. It was calculated, and it was very effective. And I always stuck up for that they were good at what it meant the most to be good at, which is defending the pass. This Bills defense has not always been great against the run. I think they got a little bit too much of a hard time for what, you know, how bad they were or whatever last year, but they did, it shows in their record. They did what was most important. They were able to defend against the pass. There's some transition in the secondary this year. I don't know. Like, it probably is the right answer. What will be their big question? But again, I kind of wonder on offense what or how much different it will be. Except for DJ Moore, you have the same team. You're adding DJ Moore You know, you're replacing who? Brandon Cooks with DJ Moore, I guess. Or even Coleman eventually. And that's another one. Not that we haven't talked about Keon Coleman enough times. But when I say something about how the fans feel, you, the fans, should feel like you want to raise your hand and, you know, maybe correct me if you think I'm wrong. And I'm always asking for that. I said to our guest from Kansas City, we were talking about Xavier Worthy, who the Chiefs traded up with the Bills for, and the Bills eventually traded down twice, once and then another time, to get to Keon Coleman at the beginning of round two, as you probably know, remember. And I just, in passing, when setting up a question about Worthy, said, I think Bills fans have pretty much written off Coleman. And that's not going to be everybody, and maybe you would take exception to that. And I go on these podcasts like tonight, where we talk about fantasy, and Coleman is, I think, to the fantasy community, completely irrelevant. Often in best ball drafts, he doesn't get picked at all. And if you use the logic that we've used for DJ Moore this offseason, or certainly Dalton Kincaid in his career, well, he might be Josh Allen's top weapon. Then how does that leave? Do we really want to leave Coleman completely ostracized from, you know, consideration here as a weapon in the Bills offense? So maybe Joe Brady is the big question, or even Jim Leonard. I don't know. A defensive coordinator doesn't really. I know it's going to be different, and there's going to be a lot of nuance to that, and we'll talk about it as we go. But I have a tough time thinking that play calling and scheme on defense is really going to be the big thing that affects this season. Maybe. There's a lot of new pieces, but I don't know. You've heard me say it, maybe. I said it to Cody Tapp as well in an earlier conversation today. I have a tough time kind of structuring an argument that something they've done or haven't done this offseason is really going to swing how it ends. It's going to determine how the season ends. I can't really get there. Good or bad? I mean, I guess if you have a healthy Josh Allen season at age 30, you'd better make the playoffs at least. Like that, I don't want to set the floor below the playoffs, assuming Allen is healthy. Like that to me seems a little bit much. But what am I trying to do? Analyzing the Bills, or if I'm Brandon Bean, building the roster that for me is going to be the difference between advancing to a Super Bowl and even winning one and not, and what's happened before. These playoff losses, with the exception of, I guess, maybe the Bengals one, although that game was competitive. I mean, the Bengals, by the fourth quarter, it was their game. But at least, I mean, in the third quarter of that game, it was live. I mean, the Bills were not just blown out or anything like that. For the most part, these games have been right there. Kansas City, 13 seconds. You know, the AFC Championship 2 years ago. Denver. For the most part, these games have been like a play or two away. And how do the Bills, do you know? If you know, you should tell us, because we all need to know this, and I don't know the answer. How should the Bills expect to remedy that? How can they really do that? And I don't feel like maybe we've really gotten too deeply into this. We had the Sabres, and then we have vacations, and now it's coming, though. Sean McDermott is gone. Is that going to help them, as harsh as that might sound, in those situations? 13 seconds, whatever you think about what happened, how the Denver game ended. You know, at times, whether it's a play call idea that didn't come, that Kansas City did and made the difference for them, whether was there something that the Bills didn't think of or couldn't execute late in these games? I guess, you know, some people are going to say, I know some fans are going to say, and have said for years even, that McDermott is what has cost them at the end of these important moments. And that's even in the regular season too. What have we said for a few years? Can the Bills please one of these times actually win the game of the year instead of lose it. Every year it seemed like they were in the best game of the regular season in the league, or even the playoffs in terms of 13 seconds probably, and lost. And, you know, coaching, especially if it happens repeatedly, coaching has to be at least mentioned in the course of that. So how do you feel as it gets closer? What are we, 2 months almost to the day from the season opener at Houston? Might even be, is it maybe the 13th? Today is July 14th. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But we're inching closer to finding out what, how life will be different around here after 9 years of Sean McDermott. 803-0550 for your calls. Maybe you were somebody or are somebody that were ready for him to go. And, you know, possibly, I'm sure there are lots of people who are maybe a little bit unsettled about it. I guess, what about all the culture stuff? Does pivoting to your offensive coordinator, who's been on the staff for years now, affect an area where the Bills actually gave themselves a lot of credit and got a lot of credit? I mean, culture is everybody's favorite word when it comes to a coaching change and how the future will be different. I'm not sure how different I should expect it to be. Brady is not McDermott. And we'll get a better feel for him, of course, as we go through the offseason. I mean, my feel for him has, other than like his results, a lot of what I take my cues from are the words, are the press conferences. And that doesn't mean if you're good at the press conference that you'll be a good coach or bad, or, you know, bad and bad. It doesn't have to correlate. But I found, as I've said before, with Brady, he's not really a risk taker with the media. Like, if you ask him a question, he'll kind of give you every possible answer to it at once and just kind of rip through it. And that doesn't always leave you with a clear idea of what he's thinking, which is probably the point. That's probably how you want it if you're a coach. Just keep him guessing and not really, you don't that way end up exposing anybody or blaming anybody, which is what you really want to avoid. So I guess maybe Brady is the answer to this. But if they're going to talk about being more aggressive, the only thing I can take that as is that Josh Allen is going to throw the ball more, which I don't hate. I just wonder, I think it might be careful what you wish for thing with that. They have been, and I don't even know that I should expect it. I mean, they have been so successful with Cook. And then Allen is almost a compliment to Cook these last 2 years. I mean, not exactly, but you know, Cook has been the, let me think. Allen is the MVP. Cook was the rushing leader in the league. And before that, led the league in touchdowns or shared in the league lead in touchdowns. He has been a big, needless to say, he has been a big part of what they do and what they are on offense. At his age, he's got the contract. He's had these last 2 years. Do you really think that they're going to curtail James Cook? I mean, Sal kind of thinks they will to a point. I think he said that in terms of workload. But it's been so successful. And it's not the kind of thing that, you know, any kind of philosophical shift in this way necessarily determines what happens in the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs are one game at a time. And in a certain matchup, you do what you need to do. But to try to get through the season, why would they, for the most part, the very most part, why would they not want to be the team they've been on offense? And you've got a coach, even though he's the head coach now, who has been calling the shots for 2 years on that offense. I don't really, when we talk about it in fantasy terms, we don't really use the Bills as an example of how things could be different. It's a popular and interesting topic in football and in fantasy football is, all right, well, here are 12 or so, however many it is this year, changes around the NFL with play callers or coaches. And what will this mean to certain players? Like, you look, where was this coach last and what kind of, you know, scheme did he run to pass, depth of target, all these kind of different topics, and what does that mean for their players? The Bills are not changing in this way at all. You can use, well, I shouldn't say that. You can use Pete Carmichael as we've talked about here briefly for a couple of days with Sal on, as a, you know, that's a change to their offense. And what kind of change might that be manifestly to how they play? And one point that has come up in my conversations with Sal is maybe you get more targets for Cook. And I just don't think, I don't think I want that. I mean, fantasy is one thing, but for the Bills offense, what we all, not all, but what I think the chorus of frustration around wide receiver is built on, can we get weapons that are credible enough where I can have Allen be at his peak, the height of his powers, where down the field, I'm just shredding you. This was, you know, what was the closest the Bills ever came to this? Diggs and Davis, or Diggs and Brown and Beasley, where they had, I mean, Diggs was elite. So you had that to start with, and then you could fill in around him. And they were good. They were fine underneath Diggs. When you have a player that's so capable, you can, you know, thrive. And they did. Now, they're struggling to find a number one. Their number one guy for 2 years has been Shakir, who, you know, it's only short passes. It's all run after the catch, if that. And I just don't think that that's ideal. And I think you agree. I mean, I think most people would agree that if Warren Sharp comes on WGR, like he did a couple of weeks ago, to report that for a number one receiver on a team, especially a team as good as the Bills, to have such low yards per target, you know, depth of passes as Shakir, what did Warren say? It's like the lowest in the NFL in 25 years or something like that. I want to say 528th out of 528 for the depth of target for your number one guy. And some of that is not an accident. I mean, some of that is trading Diggs in the first place, which, I mean, that was complicated. There were different reasons for doing that. But trading him in the first place intentionally made the Bills offense, like, sort of, it closed the walls in on them a little bit. Unless they were going to replace him with Odell Beckham at the time or somebody else who could take the top off, as they say, that never came. That never happened. So you've got Shakir, who, and then he got his contract too, so there's an investment in him. Shakir is that guy, and I don't know. Nobody ever seems to push back at me on this. I've never been fully warm to Shakir, which is not his fault. It's just because I think his being a cog in their offense kind of holds them back. Whereas if you had, I mean, you can't just have Amon-Ra St. Brown or CeeDee Lamb or one of these slot guys that just, I mean, the game is changing this way where you have slot receivers who are number ones and elite players in their offense. Their offense would be really injured without them. You can't just have that. The Bills have Shakir instead, and he just does not have the ability. He's not the player that those guys are where you can, you know, really get the ball down the field to him on any given play. It's got to happen on a screen. It's got bubble screens, which everybody hates. It's got to happen on one of these kind of plays. So there's something to talk about. Like, what will be, as we get closer to camp, like 2 weeks away, and people start to write about this kind of stuff for every team, it's always Bill Barnwell in my head. Maybe he's already written it. I don't know. But what would be the big question for the Bills? They went back into waivers today for another receiver whose name I've never heard, I think. I mean, not even on ADP chasing do I believe this name has been mentioned. Maybe tonight, on the occasion of his being signed to the Bills roster, Quentin Skinner from the Jets, and the Bills released Devin Tompkins, I think it is, or Tompkins? Tompkins, from their roster to make room for Quentin Skinner. So I guess we need to get to work on him. It is list season in football, which I hate and couldn't possibly have any use for. These lists are so bad. The thing that you don't know, or you might know, I feel like I know, that might be counterintuitive. You know it's a bad list when the players make it. Because the players are not the right people for listing, you know, who's good and who's not, who are the top 100 players in the league. The last, maybe not the last, Maybe people who've never watched an NFL game would be worse than NFL players at ranking each other, but no. All-star games, NFL top 100, anything of the sort, the last people you want for a good outcome, for like a fair outcome, is players. Too much politics, too, during the season anyway, too immersed in their own game plans and their own work to really know anything past maybe a random highlight show that they might come across or something on Twitter to tell them who's good. They know each other. They know who's supposed to be good. They can read stats just like you and I, but they're not to be trusted when it comes to ranking. For as easy as it is to pick on the media would be a much better, and you know, many of these lists are media generated, but not all of them. They'd be a much better resource for objectively ranking players than the players themselves. Lamar Jackson is the one now. I hate to even indulge in this, but I've been talking to myself for 20 minutes, and maybe this is just what's on my mind now. I hate to even like honor it. The 69th best player in the NFL, at the most important position with two MVP awards, in his prime, what is he, 29, 30 years old? Like, that makes sense. There's got to be some linebackers I can rank above Lamar Jackson. I'm done. And we should have been done years ago arguing about whether Lamar Jackson is actually great. I mean, that has been asked and answered for a long time. And any further conversation about that is completely wasted energy. I mean, I think there is, at the risk of, you know, I as his constant apologist or defender, I think there is an interesting, he is in an interesting moment in his career, as is Allen, but I think in a greater way, Jackson, in really where, unlike Allen, Jackson has flopped in the postseason. I mean, not in every situation. He's had wins and he's had his moments, but this is really where I think Lamar Jackson has the potential to be a player that really does wear the label of a playoff, you know, a choker. Is that going too far? I mean, I think he does in a way that Allen doesn't. Allen still has to win it to shake any sort of questions about him in the postseason. But Jackson, I think, to a greater extent. So I think that is interesting to try to figure out, like whether or not that can be done with Allen too. I mean, what did Cody Tapp say joining me last hour about Allen in reference to the Denver game, like worst game of his career? I mean, it definitely wasn't the worst game of his career, but the turnovers were the story that day. And, you know, you still, of course, lost only in overtime. That's sort of what we're used to having happen. So I don't want to, there's no point in like reopening the case on Lamar Jackson's greatness, but Allen and Jackson and like I'm sure Burrow, I mean, there are Dak Prescott, I think maybe quintessentially quarterbacks who've been elite or close to it that don't have, other than Burrow, a single Super Bowl appearance yet. Now you've got Darnold winning. I mean, that's really interesting and significant in the discourse. Just like, all right, well, another year went by. Especially this is the Allen point, if not also Jackson, although he was hurt. He came back. They had the lead there late in Pittsburgh. They missed the field goal and they're out. Just they didn't get a cushion. He would have been healthy for the playoffs. But still, like his injury really damaged their season. Just to see a year, as we've all talked about and recognized, where you don't have Mahomes in the playoffs, and in Allen's case, doesn't have Jackson either, for what that's worth, and still to fall short, it really hurts. 803-0550 for your calls. I'm Mike Shope. I need a hydration break. Is that, we have that now. So we have breaks anyway, so I don't need to get cute. Bulldog is off this week. This is WGR.
If your life was on the line and you needed one quarterback to win the game for you at the end, and I gave you Patrick Mahomes on one side and Josh Allen on the other, who are you taking? Be honest. Even if you hate the Chiefs, even if you hate Patrick Mahomes, in the same way that you hated Tom Brady and you hated the New England Patriots. I get it. You're tired of Kansas City. You reveled in the Chiefs' misery last year. I understand. It all makes sense. But you can't say that Mahomes is not the best.
Nick Kostos. He's been heard. Okay, great. Mike Schopier, 803-0550 is the number. You know how insufferable these quarterback ranking conversations can be. Maybe you don't think so. I don't hate Kansas City. I go as hard as I possibly can to avoid listening to that. No matter which side somebody's on, it just rots my brain. You know how insufferable it can be, but in the real world, Allen does have to live with that until he wins. Maybe he has to win too. I don't know. Peyton Manning, I would say Peyton Manning got that kind of legacy off his back when he won the second one with Denver, maybe if not the first one with Indianapolis. At least the first one gets you free and clear from never done it. But you win two. How much can be said about your inability to win championships? I think Peyton Manning decidedly was the best quarterback to ever play. And, you know, if you don't win Super Bowls, you don't have... Here's Nick making a point in a vacuum. Who else is on the team, Nick? Who are we playing against? I mean, he wouldn't care because it's an easy scoreboard call. Mahomes has three, and he's been to five, right? And Allen has yet to go to any. But I think I think the greats win two. The greatest of the greats win at least two. I remember reading the late John Feinstein's book called The Majors about golf. He wrote lots of books, and I really enjoyed that. And I think maybe it's like right at the beginning of that book, if I remember right, it's about how lots of relatively anonymous golfers have won a major, but maybe it's like within the ropes, the thinking is like, you got to win two, then you're special. I feel like that's right. That there's some merit to that. Well, as far as Allen is concerned, let's get one. And Jackson and Burrow and Prescott and whoever else, Brock Purdy, whoever else needs to be included in that. Great, good to great quarterbacks. I mean, Purdy's not great, I don't think, but he's good. You know, guys that have come close. All the legacy talk, it'll never change. It's what gets sports talk through the summer, I guess, is, you know what? Let's just rank some stuff. I'm not above it. We rank stuff. We just did reverse AFC power rankings today. I can't claim that I'm too good for it. We did it. Here's Larry next. Hi, Larry.
Mike, I don't know how anyone could be excited about Joe Brady. And I'm not just trying to be overly negative, but this offseason has been so uninspiring. We're really going to hang our head on C.J. Gardner-Johnson at safety. He's going to be off the team by probably week 8. Bradley Chubb is going to be hurt by week 4. DJ Moore is a fine player. I'm not trying to diss him, but I'm not excited about that signing at all. I mean, really, I think the best we got to hope for is that Skylar Bell is incredible. And the thing that really upset me about Brady, and I get that this is just coach speak, but tripling down on Keon. Dude, how out of touch are you with the fan base? Keon, like you said last segment, is an afterthought right now. And Joe Brady's talking about how he's got high hopes for him and this, you know, is going to be a good offseason. They said the same thing last offseason. Last year was a complete disaster. I just cannot believe the inattentiveness to the roster, particularly the receiver room, that Bean keeps showing. And I can't get excited about Brady, no way.
Okay, well, the Coleman point definitely is, I can't say definitely, like he doesn't mean it. It's, of course, what a coach would say. It's not, we learned in this, on the same player's example, we learned, I guess it's not necessarily what the owner would say. That was what really was incredible, was when Terry Pegula jumped in on Bean at the press conference that time and said, listen, it was the coach's idea. Like, what a terrible instinct that was. Who are you making to look good by saying that? You know, you've cut Bean's legs out. Like, he doesn't even get to pick the players in that case. You know, you're embarrassing a player who was still on your own team. I don't know. Like, that was just such a terrible instinct. As much as I want, whenever I sort of make the call for more honesty in these press conferences, often a fan will come back at me with like, well, what do you expect them to say? Like, I know, but it doesn't mean I can't want it. And I think there are ways, as a professional communicator, I'm going to say, I think there are ways you can do that diplomatically if you're smart enough and figure out how not to embarrass anybody, but also kind of be real. And Bean happens to be somebody that does impress me in that way, but that's not what you called about. Your bottom line is, how can you be excited about Brady? What's the answer to that? How? Well, they've had a high-ranking offense. They've won tons of games. And he's been the play caller. So I guess that's how you could do it. The thing about, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but the thing about the choice of Brady that was really, I would say, kind of weird is that McDermott was fired in the name of change. And then you promoted from within. That really doesn't wash, you know? Like, what if you want change, then go get it. And it was perfectly reasonable to want that. These things do run their course. The playoff wall, or whoever Pegula put it, when he announced, when they talked about McDermott being let go. I mean, that happens in sports. And each year, naturally, each year that goes by, when you fall short, more people are ready for it. And 9 years, all those playoff close calls and losses, now you're losing to Bo Nix. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's, I don't think it was incredible that they made a coaching change, but they did it in the name of change. Like, this has, it's time. It's been long enough. We've been close but lost. And you promoted your offensive coordinator, and for that matter, you promoted your GM. Well, I don't know. That seems a little bit like throwing stuff at the wall. And hiring Brady was easier. There are certain moments over the years where big news drops and you remember where you were. I mean, of course, like big news, that's easy. You don't even have to think about it. Whatever, I don't know. Natural disasters, or, you know, something on a much higher level. But I can remember where I was in my car. I was in Canada. Maybe I was working that day, or maybe I was off, but it was like around noon. I think it was probably, I don't know, doesn't matter. It was around noon. And, oh yeah, I think I was going to Toronto. Anyway, noon on a given day, it's announced that the Bills have hired Joe Brady. And I couldn't believe it. I think we were all sort of led to believe that they were going to go outside, that was the reason for the change. It was there was a guy in Jacksonville. There was a guy with the Rams, younger offensive assistants who were in the conversation. Then there were some older retread types that we heard about. But I don't know. Like, to me, it was never going to be Brady because of what the original move was described as. And then it was. So I don't think it's impossible to be optimistic for him. And, you know, Bulldog often says, and he's not here to say it, but I'll try to represent him, what we don't know about Brady yet. Nobody knows this. The Bills don't know this. He's never been a head coach, right? So what we don't know about him is his touch with players. Can he avoid the potholes with the media and, you know, any sort of internal stuff that can distract a coach or can become a problem from within? And that's really, I mean, he's young. He's been at it for long enough where he's done tons of press conferences. I mean, he's not brand new to that, but he's never been the leader. And now he's going to have to take questions on, like, why the Bills can't get sacks, or how they've dipped to 20th in pass coverage or something like that. And, you know, it doesn't define a coach and their ability to do the job, but it's almost the best we've got, listening to his explanations for things and trying to figure out how good a handle he has on the operation and whether it's good enough. I think you can be optimistic. I thought it was weird, and it's not what I would have done. I mean, I think if you have Allen, I mean, most 95% of people would say the same thing. If you have Allen, you're going to be fine. If he's healthy, you're going to be fine. So it could have been someone else. It isn't someone else, and it's Brady, and that means still I think they're probably going to be fine. But it's in the key moments against the best teams in the playoffs when the pressure is at its greatest, can you come up with the goods? And that's Allen, too. He's not absolved from any sort of role in that. I mean, he's the quarterback. But can the coach come up with the play call, the idea? And that is what the Bills have not been able to do. Not every one of these playoff losses have they had five turnovers. But in those key moments, Allen included, they've just not executed. I think Allen is the one to blame for the end of the game they lost to Kansas City at home in the playoffs. Because as I've said then and I've always thought, he just didn't make the right decision on that second down play where he had Diggs crossing underneath. And instead he went to the end zone, it didn't hit. Third down, didn't hit. Pass pressure, and then they missed the field goal and lost. That's one where I think, not to rehash this and try to get everybody back to remember every detail from that, but the clock was really their friend. They didn't use it. They just wasted it and ended up missing the kick, which I'm sure they were not planning on. Still, so I think Allen's a part of that. Coaching is a part of that. Even the head coach, I mean, 13 seconds quintessentially, is a part of that. Will they get that right this time? It's not like they can't. But to keep it the same up top when you made the coaching change for change's sake, just really didn't line up great, I think. Been a long time since I've thought about that. But, you know, time to brush up. We can't just talk about World Cup for very much longer. It's almost over. There's only two games left. Well, technically three. They do have a third place game. So France, you can't go home yet. France gets tomorrow's loser. I think in, dare I say it, Foxborough. Not Boston, but I think that's where the third place game, the final's in New York. Oh, wait, sorry, New Jersey. Is anything really to be believed anymore? There is a third place game, so there's three games left. Tomorrow, England, Argentina, winner gets Spain. Spain beat France today 2-0. 803-0550. Thank you, Larry. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off this week. You are listening to WGR.